Good morning, everyone. How nice to be here. I'm Nyaswami Jyotish, for those of you who don't know me, and this is Nyaswami Devi, and we live mainly at Ananda Village, although we travel quite a lot. See a lot of old friends here and some new ones. Few random thoughts running through my mind before we get into the topic about self-transcendence. One is that, remember the affirmation we did when we live surrounded by God's light, nothing and no one can touch me? There's a beautiful story about Master and his first disciple in this country, Dr. Lewis. Dr. Lewis was a dentist who lived in Boston, and one of the things that he enjoyed doing was sailing. And so one afternoon he was out in Boston Harbor sailing his boat, and a sudden squall came up and was threatening to overturn the little sailboat that he was in. And he remembered that Master had told him that if you live surrounded by Om or surrounded by light, that you'll be safe. And so he started to chant Om and think of Master, and he saw a big light go around the little sailboat that he had. On the other coast, Master was in California, and he was reading a story by Joseph Conrad about the sea. And as he was reading it, he said to the other person who was in the room, he said, "Doctor," he stood up and he started striding, and he said, "Doctor's in trouble. Doctor's in trouble, I tell you, serious trouble." And he put out this light, and that's what Dr. Lewis saw surrounding that sailboat. And then he was able to get home safely. And when he walked in the door, the phone rang and he picked it up. And Master was on the other end, said, "Came close to getting wet there, didn't you, Master? Didn't you, Doctor?" But when we live surrounded in the light of God, especially if we have a connection with a pure channel of God like Master, we are protected as long as we offer ourselves. And that self-offering is really the subject of today's talk. The other random thought that I had was the little passage from the Bhagavad Gita where it says, "Out of 1,000, one seeks me. And out of 1,000 who seek me, one perhaps finds me." That, for you math geniuses, that's 1 in 1,000,000. 1,000, 1,000. But Master said, our percentages are much better because we have the science of yoga, the technique of Kriya Yoga especially. But talking about self-transcendence, that is a very deep subject, very serious subject, because it isn't essentially what we think it is, which is to become a nicer and nicer person until somehow magically you're nice enough and God appreciates you finally and does something and you're in heaven. That's unfortunately not the way that it works. It does require that. You do have to work at becoming a nicer and nicer person. But that's the preparatory stage. At Ananda Village, we have, just as you do, a school. And the teachers there help the students, especially the young ones, to discern higher movements of energy, better attitudes. And one of the games that they play with the students is big self, little self. And big self is when they're magnanimous, when they're thinking of others, when they're caring, when they're kind, when they're expansive. And little self, as you can well imagine, is the opposite, when they're self-involved and selfish and so on. And at any rate, the teachers will help the students say big self or little self according to their kind of behavior patterns. And last spring, during the time at the end of the school year where the teachers talk about each of the students, they were talking about one of the students who is playing this game. And after about 3 months or 2 months of playing it, he came up. He was about 6 or 7 years old. He came up to his teacher and said, "You know, I can't remember my little self anymore. Isn't that beautiful? But self-transformation does require the refinement of our spirit, the refinement of our behavior. All spiritual paths begin with what Sri Yukteswar, Yogananda's guru, told him, learn to behave. So in the Western tradition, the Judeo-Christian tradition, we have the Ten Commandments, and that's like the fundamental basis. In Patanjali, we have the Yamas and the Niyamas, the fundamental basis, the rules of behavior. Because we have to learn those rules of behavior, because without that, we don't begin the passage to higher consciousness. Every Sunday, at the end of Sunday service, we read the Festival of Light. And in that festival, for those of you who have been coming for some years, assuming that you come every week, you have heard several hundred times, you have heard the story of the little bird, which is really the story of the evolution of the soul, one might say, the evolution of the refinement of the soul. And so as you remember, the little bird starts out in flight for the first time, and it begins to think, what else is wisdom if not to keep what is mine for myself? Well, that represents a stage of mankind, a stage of our own consciousness. And let me ask you, is that big self or little self? So that represents the little self, where we are thinking that what I have is mine. And what else is wisdom? We actually think in that stage, because we don't have a higher internal reference, we think that that's wisdom to accumulate, to think what is mine for myself. Now, we might say, oh, well, we don't do that kind of thing. We're above that. But pick up the newspaper. Pick up the newspaper today, and I'm sure that you will find a dozen or more headline stories about people being selfish, greedy, self-involved, presented as if it's wisdom. You know, they just had the draft for the NFL, and all those players who got drafted high up, they're all going to become multimillionaires. Multimillionaires. And the vast majority of people are going to say, oh, isn't that wonderful? They got really rich. Only a few, maybe 1 out of 1,000 who seek God and 1 out of 1,000 who have found God, will say, ooh, dangerous period those people are going through. What else is wisdom if not to keep what is mine for myself? So if they're given a great amount of energy in the term of in money, is it wisdom that they're going to keep that for themselves? It isn't necessarily bad that they have that flow, but it's a big spiritual test, a very big spiritual test, if you have a lot of resources, because if you keep that to yourself, it will end up kind of hurting you. So our culture as a whole, we're just kind of, we're in the early stages of advancement, the whole cultural, the yugas and so on. Dwapara Yuga, the age that we're in, is the age of the merchant. And the merchant consciousness is relatively low, but it's kind of characterized by thinking, what else is wisdom if not to keep what is mine for myself? What else is wisdom if not to accumulate more? What else is, and so we have that consciousness. But we have to grow out of that, because that consciousness is the stage of rebellion. Remember the story of the little bird, the tiny rebel. That's the tiny rebel, the little self. And if we're going to achieve self-transcendence, we have to grow beyond that. And so the next stage of growth comes along when life's buffeting winds gives us enough trials, enough difficulty, enough pain, enough failure, enough fear. So we begin to say, I'm afraid. I need something more. I need help. I can't depend entirely on this little self. And so as the soul begins to come forward, I say the evolution of the soul. In fact, the soul doesn't evolve. It's the incrustation of self-definitions around the soul, which gets thinner and thinner. And that's what's evolving. But I don't want to get too technical here. So in the evolution of the soul, we begin to think that there's got to be something more than myself. And we get afraid and we say, how can I fly in this darkness? And the night answers, surrender to me and your strength will be renewed. So we get a sense that there's something beyond ourselves, a spiritual flow, the glimmerings of true wisdom, which is that we do have to surrender. And then when we do that, the whole of nature supports us. The wind and the rain and the grassy fields all sing to us, behold, your very strength to fly was never your own. The very ability to do what we're doing, that is not our own. It was given to us by God. And so they say to us, find the source of your strength. And what does the little bird say? He says, where can I find that source? Where? That's the stage that we're in. We're, as it says, we like that little bird. We're in that stage. Where can we find that source? And they say, seek it in the farthest depths of being, in your own self. So as we come, and this stage is called the quest. So as we come into the quest, we begin to seek within that which we otherwise have been seeking without. Now, what do we seek? What is it in essence that we're seeking all the time? Master said that everyone in the world is motivated by the same single motivation. We are seeking happiness or seeking to push away unhappiness or pain. And so all along we're seeking happiness, but in the stage of rebellion, in the little self, we think that selfish acts, accumulation, greed, hurting others is going to lead to our happiness. And it takes a long time and buffeting winds and pain and a lot of experience. We're talking about many, many, many lifetimes here before we begin to say, you know, the strategy seemed pretty good at the beginning, but it doesn't seem to be working so well because God keeps it from us. He doesn't master, this sounds mean. It sounds mean to me anyway. Swami said one time, was talking with Master about why does it take so long? And Master said, well, it just takes a long time. You know, you have certain... Swami said, does it always take so long? And Master said, yes, it does. You have certain flaws in your thinking, in your nature. And then, either then or in another conversation, Master said, in fact, God makes it a little hard. It's a game of hide and seek, and he doesn't hide behind the first chair that you come into the room. It's hard. He makes you seek. In fact, he said that you are even born on different planets, because if you came back to the same planet, you'd figure it out too quickly. Now, that seems a little mean to me, but I don't know. Got to accept the conditions that we have. At any rate, we're entered into the stage which is called the quest, and we begin to look inside. And as we begin to look inside, we begin to realize more and more that the battle is not outside of ourselves. It's not about changing the environment. It's not about changing other people. It's not about accumulating and getting and somehow getting everything perfect, and then we'll be okay and we'll be holy. It's like the ocean. The ocean waves are always going to be there. And the more we function from the little self, Master said, is the big wave, because it's trying to look big. And it tries to get itself up above other waves. And when you have a lot of waves trying to get themselves up above each other, what do you have? Stormy seas. So if you want stormy weather, emphasize the little self. Master said the great ones are just little waves. One time Swami Kriyananda was, with great love, Master had been helping some other people. And he was about to stand up, and he reached out because his legs were giving him some problems in those days. Reached out, and Swami helped him up out of his chair. And Swami was looking at him with great, great love. And Master looked back with deep love in his eyes and said, just a bulge on the ocean. Just a bulge. So as the ego begins to get less, the waves begin to get less, until you begin to see yourself not as the wave, not as the separate entity, but as the ocean itself. And that's what we're after, that transcendence. But it takes a stage, a long stage of the quest. And as we begin in that quest, as I say, we begin to see more and more that the battle is inside, not outside. When we sang that beautiful song, Brave Are the People. In fact, it's one of my favorite songs. I guess I have a lot of favorite songs of Swami's. Like having a whole bunch of best friends. Now that's, I guess, not so bad. But brave were the people who lived in those hills. And brave were the warriors who confronted the foe. To defend what is holy, to defend what is true, God on mankind did this duty bestow. So it sounds like, and Gary McSweeney will love this, sounds like that refers to the ancient Irish warriors. And in fact, that's where the origin of the thought came. Swami was in Ireland, and that song came from that time. But who are those foes? Who are those warriors? As long as we think they're outside of ourselves, we're missing the point. The real foes are our own tendencies that draw us down into the little self. And who are the brave warriors who lived in those hills? Those are our spiritual tendencies. Master said that when you interpret scripture, you should see the characters in that scripture as mental citizens or parts of your own consciousness. So when you hear spiritual teachings or even spiritual songs, look beneath the surface, because the words represent spiritual truth if it's really a spiritual song. And that's inward. Where can I find that source? Look to the deepest self in your own self. That's where that source is, and that's where we're going to find transcendence. And then finally, what is the last part of the little bird's flight? It's the redemption. And the redemption says, offer up the little light that is in you into the great light that is God. And what does that mean? Does it mean, as we symbolically are going to do later on, we're going to go up, we're going to take a candle and we're going to hold it up to the gurus? Yes, it means that, but only in a very superficial way. That's symbolic of offering up the little light that is in us into the great light that is God. But what does it really mean? What is the real meaning of that passage? The real meaning is that we take the life force that is in us, the pranic, universal prana that's everywhere, and that has come into us as our own life force. And when we're trying to become everything, we take that inner life force and we offer it up. This is the practice of Kriya Yoga. The real light of God that we will see is the point between the eyebrows. And so by offering up our life force, our sense of self-identity, of separation, by offering that up through our spiritual practices, deep inward spiritual practices into the great light of God, ultimately, if we do that deeply enough, we transcend the little self. What this really means is that we transcend. We not only can come to the teacher, Master, and say, Master, I've almost forgotten the little self. There won't be a little self to forget anymore. It'll be only the great self. One time, Master, during the time he was writing the interpretations of the Bhagavad Gita, Swami was with him out in the desert. And his mind was in a very, Master's mind was in a very expansive state at that point. And they were walking, and he had Swami take his arm because he was a little unsteady on his feet. And he said, sometimes it's hard to remember to keep this little body moving when I feel myself equally in all bodies. And so when we transcend the little self, the little bird is redeemed. It no longer has a separate identity. It becomes the wind and the rain and the grassy fields and the planets, and it becomes all of life. And that is the destiny for each and every one of us.
Good morning. I'll also share a few words since we don't come here all that often. Christ's words that we were listening to earlier are very interesting, and we have to approach them from different levels. He was talking about persecution and how to relate to those who hate you and your enemies. And one has to think that he was preparing his disciples and his close followers for what was to come, the terrible persecution and judgment that he was going to go through. And in fact, when you look at the lives of saints, East and West, all of them, almost invariably, went through tremendous tests and trials brought on by, often by their own fellow monks and nuns or ashram associates. The life of St. John of the Cross in Spain, he was a tremendously holy saint. Young man, but the others were jealous of him, and they questioned where his spirituality was coming from, and they beat him, and they tortured him, and they threw him in a little kind of a space between two walls, and that's where he lived. But through miraculous means, he was able to escape. I've recently been reading a very inspiring book about the life of Sri Sharda Devi. She was the spiritual partner, consort of the great master, Sri Ramakrishna. And Ramakrishna, for those of you who are from India or have been to India, there's the wonderful temple outside of Calcutta, Dakshineshwar, and that's where he lived and where he was greatly devoted to God in the form of Divine Mother as Kali. And he was recognized as a great, great spiritual soul. And then she came to join him there, and people weren't so sure about who she was, even though Ramakrishna knew that she would be his spiritual heir, and she carried on his work for nearly 30 years after he passed away. But when she first came, they had her living in this little room that she couldn't even stand up in. No windows. It was dark. It was where they stored the food. And it was screened off so that no one could see. And she would cook for him in this little storeroom, essentially. And that's where she lived for many, many years. And it was not an easy life for her. But if that's all it was about, was persecution from others, it wouldn't take us all that far in our own spiritual path. But what Christ is also saying is the path to God is one of looking at the tests that come to you and looking at them and seeing what they are. And as Jyotish was saying, the real enemy is not the mean person at work or the jealous family member or whatever it might be. The real persecution comes from our own attachments and desires. They are the ones that are challenging and undermining our true soul nature. So we go out and, you know, when you drive around in any big city, you know, all the advertising. And all it's saying is, let's make it bigger, or let's make it littler, or let's make it a different color, or maybe a slightly different color. Let's make it faster, let's make it slower, but let's change it, whatever it is. We're not happy now, so if we change it, we'll be happy. And we're persecuted by this. We're driven by this. And we go after it, and we don't realize that we are selling our soul happiness by giving our happiness, placing it outside of ourselves. And so what we need to understand in fighting the battle that is the spiritual life, make no mistake. I remember the very first talk I ever heard Swami Kriyananda give many years ago. And I was very new to the path. I was interested in meditation, interested in yoga postures, but that was about it. And halfway through the autobiography of a yogi, no great commitment at this point. And Swami Kriyananda gave, this was 1969, he gave a powerful lecture. And he said, make no mistake, God will ask everything of you. And I just about walked out the door and never came back. Because it's not what I wanted. I wanted to do some yoga postures. They were fun. But that is the truth. The more sincere you are, the more all of those things within yourself, your desires, your attachments, your preconceptions that this is the way life should be, this is how that person should act towards me, this is the kind of compensation and recognition I should get for my greatness, quote, quote. And the world does not, if you haven't noticed it yet, the world does not respond the way we want it to. It has its own course that it's running. And that course is really the whole design of the whole thing is to make us realize I'm not going to find my happiness here. And it persecutes us. It hounds us. It goes after us. And Swami Kriyananda gave a beautiful image in trying to talk about this process of being challenged and tested by life and how we can respond to it so that we transcend it. And he said, let's say there's this much energy coming at you, and this is your test, whatever it might be, financial or personal or with your health. And so think of a graph, and this is the line, and it's coming up. Well, we cannot overcome that test on its own level. We cannot think, oh, well, I'll just try a little harder to be nicer to that person, or maybe I'll get a new health protocol and I'll get better. The problems cannot be solved on their own level of energy. And so what Swami said, what we need to do to overcome our test is to have a rising and higher level of energy and transcending that problem on whatever it is. And that's when you have the breakthroughs. That's where you say, oh my gosh, I love those moments where you're struggling and struggling with something and you keep trying to solve it and keep trying to solve it and it seems so elusive. And then you just put out a little bit more energy and it's clear. It comes into focus. I know what to do. I know how to transcend this. This will not persecute me forever. Get thee behind me. I'm done with you. I'm stronger than you. And that comes by putting out more energy with regard to whatever it is you're doing. And when we put out more energy and we see it clearly for what it is, you know what happens? We realize it was God all the time, playing hide and seek with us as the mean boss or the jealous sister or the paycheck that isn't enough. It was just God hiding behind all those forms to say, don't you see me? Don't you see it was always me here? There's a beautiful story from the life of St. Francis, who Master called our patron saint. And he, you know, beautiful, if you don't know his life story, read about it. It's a beautiful, beautiful life in God, coming from, in one life, coming from a life of comfort and luxury, leaving all that behind, eschewing everything of the world, but living totally in the divine love of God. But once he was wandering the countryside, and he saw approaching in the distance a group of lepers. And he had a great abhorrence. It was something that he had a personal rejection of. And he started to run away. And then he said, no. And he went up to one of the lepers, and he embraced him and kissed him. And in that moment, when he looked at him, no more was it a leper. He saw the face of Christ. And this is, it's such a beautiful image for all of our tests. If we push them away, they forever haunt us and persecute us. But if we embrace them and say, God, you can't hide from me anymore. I know where you are. I have to share a story about the life of St. Francis that was a personal little story for me. This was in the early days of Ananda, and it was pretty rustic in those days. And I was living in a teepee. And there isn't a lot of home improvement you can do in a teepee. But I thought, well, I'll do something to make it a little more, I don't know, attractive. And so I took strips of fabric, and I tied little bells, and I tied them to the very, very top of the teepee poles. And so whenever the wind would blow, you could hear the little bells. And that was my home decorating for my teepee. But one morning, and you don't really have a door on a teepee, you just have a little canvas flap. And so one morning, maybe I'm losing my mic here, I can adjust it. I can see people hovering at the microphone, at the stand. One morning, it had been raining very, very hard all night. And I was reading a book about the life of St. Francis. And then it stopped raining, and I lifted up the flap and looked outside. And the first sentence that came to my mind was, the mountains were blanketed with mist. And then I went back to my book about St. Francis that I was reading, and the first sentence was, the mountains were blanketed with mist. And I thought, oh, that's kind of strange. And then the wind started blowing, and I could hear the trees, and I thought, oh, the wind is rustling through the trees. The next sentence I read was, the wind was rustling through the trees. And I was getting a little eerie at this point. And then the wind started blowing those little bells on the hanging from the teepee poles. And I heard the bells ringing, and St. Francis, the next line in the book was, in the distance, St. Francis heard the bells. And I thought, this is scary. And then I read the next line, and it said, it was the approach of the lepers. And I just closed the book. I can deal with everything else, but not ready for the lepers today. But coming back to the life of St. Francis and to our lives, we need to understand that the self-transcendence, it's a beautiful dance all the time with God, all the time. And if we can even, from this day on, just say, whatever comes, I will see God's face. And then look back, everything that happened, the worst of times, the best of times, and just say, God, that was you, wasn't it? You were hiding in that difficult growing up. You were hiding in those problems. You were hiding in all the tests and trials we've gone through. And then, as it says in the Gita, we can be one of the thousand that says, all is Vasudev, all is the Lord. You can't fool me anymore now. I see through the game. And I know that everything that comes is for the triumph of my soul and the emerging of my consciousness unshakably in thy love, in thy joy, in thy light. God bless you.